Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bravish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50, by Lisa Niver, narrated by Lisa Niver. Just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, she became a butterfly, Zhuan Zhu. Thank you to my parents for their love, support, and for giving me both roots and wings. Prologue. Broken Sky. I lay on the sidewalk, looking up at the sky. Yesterday, I'd been mesmerized by Wat Run Kun, a complex of white buildings made of glittering porcelain, better known as the White Temple. The temple was one of the main reasons we had traveled 3 hours and 30 minutes by bus from Chiang Mai in northern Thailand to the smaller and less touristy Chiang Rai. I had walked across the long, glistening bridge over the calm lake to see the temple, which sat on what seemed to be an island, and could not believe how beautiful it was. Naga serpents slithered across the roof, intricate and stunning, so delicate they looked as though they had been made out of white lace and frosting. I loved the mirrored reflections of the temple in the water and tried my best to capture them with my camera. But Fred chastised me for taking photo after photo of the same thing. They're digital photos. I thought, why can't I take as many as I want? As we walked around, I even managed to use a few Thai words, which I was trying to learn and speak as much as I could. My favorite phrase was "di mak mak," which means very good. I had used it when we bought our entrance tickets too. But Fred had been impatient with me talking to the man behind the counter, so we quickly moved on. Now, however, I found myself lying on the ground trying to figure out what had happened. Fred stood over me, his eyes open too wide and his face getting redder and redder. Only a minute before, we had been discussing where to eat lunch. Chiang Rai, famous for its sacred religious sites and homestay visits for curious foreigners with local tribes, was also known for its cuisine. We had wandered from our hotel along a wide street with proper sidewalks, and Fred walked single file behind me. Suddenly, without making a sound, like a stealth attack from behind, he grabbed hold of me and threw me down on the ground. As I lay there on the sidewalk, stunned, and reeling from the impact, he reached down and took hold of my necklace. Made from a seashell, I cherished it and never took it off because it had been his first gift to me on an early trip to Fiji. He pulled on it hard, breaking the chain, and yanked it off me with such force that I feared it might have cut my neck. I felt like I was being mugged in the New York City subway, but the man standing over me wasn't a mugger or a stranger. He was my husband who was supposed to love me. He cast my necklace away from us as if the farther it went, the less I meant to him. He shouted, "You are a terrible person. You are disloyal. You are a terrible wife." I had slammed into the ground when he pushed me, and I might have been bleeding or even had a broken arm or back, but I was too hurt and confused to care. I heaved myself up and tried to defend myself. "I am a great wife," I countered. "You always say that you love me so much and that I'm your favorite person. What is wrong with you? Why are you acting this way?" Out of the corner of my eye, I saw a Thai man watching us nearby. Mortified, I thought, here we are in this spiritual place, a town that has more temples than hotels, and we are screaming at each other in the street. My next thought was, what will happen to me if that man calls the police? If the Thai police came, they would believe it was my fault. We were in a tiny town many miles and hours away from Bangkok or Chiang Mai, and I was a woman. The police would take my husband's side. Would I end up in Thai jail? We'd been traveling in Southeast Asia for 18 months, spending all day, every day, together on the road. Fred and I were seasoned travelers, and this was our second big trip. On our first, an 11-month trip after only a few months of dating, we got engaged. We had met online in 2007 when we were both working in Los Angeles and immediately connected over our love of foreign lands. That morning, we'd argued about our website, wesaidgotravel.com, which began after our first long trip together. Fred was angry that I had agreed to work on a video contest with our tech muse, Declan. The idea was to have travelers send in their favorite videos from around the globe, and our judges would pick the best one. I was growing our YouTube channel slowly. The contest would help grow and promote the site, and I knew we needed more videos. While I loved the idea of a video contest, I knew I couldn't do it alone. There were already many challenges with the writing contest I was currently running on the website. Fred refused to work on the website and complained when I did. When Declan offered to help me, I accepted it like a drowning swimmer grabs a lifeline. Fred had wanted to start a video contest in the past, but I'd always said no. We already had 3 writing contests a year that ended on Valentine's Day, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving that took up a huge amount of time and effort. I worried Fred's video contest would mean even more work for me when he was already angry about me spending so much time on the website. Sometimes I even worked on my computer in the bathroom in our hotel room so he wouldn't be disturbed as I wrote blog posts, edited photos, and promoted our articles on social media in order to make money. That morning, on a Skype video call with Declan, he broached a similar idea. After some discussion, I had said okay. So now Fred was angry. I had agreed to Declan's video contest, but not his. In Fred's mind, now I was disloyal and I liked Declan better. I wanted to be partners with Declan and be married to Declan. He was furious and hurled all these absurd accusations at me now as I stood opposite him on the sidewalk. I felt humiliated. I could not believe the stupid things he was screaming at me loudly in public. I tried to steer the conversation back towards something remotely civil to no avail. Finally, I took a deep breath and a step back. For a moment, both of us were silent. Then he turned and began walking away. I briefly considered following him. I thought maybe I could better explain why I had agreed with Declan. But something held me back. I always hated it when he got angry. But this time, I felt he had gone too far. He'd pushed me down in broad daylight when there were other people around. He was not drinking, and I knew that I had done nothing wrong. Chapter 1. Disoriented. I returned to our hotel room at Mantrini. Looking out to the patio, I felt like I was in a fishbowl. Could the people walking by tell that my marriage was broken? I felt nauseous. I could not stop crying or shaking. Was this the end? Could I forgive him again? Should I? In my hand, I held the shell from my necklace. After Fred had stormed off, I managed to find it in the street. The clasp on the gold chain was broken, but I was glad that it was broken rather than my neck. I wasn't sure if I would ever fix it or wear it again. I took off my wedding ring and just kept staring at it. I knew I couldn't bring myself to put it back on. I closed the shades and opened my computer to Skype with a friend. Carl was one of my best friends from college. I'd known him since my very first day at the University of Pennsylvania. When he answered in Los Gatos, California, I was crying hysterically. Take a deep breath. Are you okay? Are you safe? I told him I was in my hotel room in Chiang Rai, alone. He asked me what happened. Oh God, Carl, he just went nuts. He pushed me onto the ground. He came up behind me and all of a sudden, I was on the sidewalk and all I could see was the sky. He was shouting at me. People were staring. I can't believe this is happening. Carl had met Fred multiple times and been an honored guest at our wedding. He had always known my boyfriends and protected me like a big brother. No one knew how bad things were between Fred and I, maybe even me. Even so, Carl could hear that I was upset and quickly understood things must be terrible if I was calling him all the way from Asia crying. Over the years, even when we had lived in different countries, Japan for him, Israel for me, we had always talked long distance, but usually to trade good news. "Lisa," he said firmly, "there must be consequences." Consequences? In that moment, I didn't understand what those consequences should be, mostly because I still felt that on some level, I must be responsible for the situation. I had wanted to come to Asia to get back on the road because Fred was so unhappy in Los Angeles. I thought that if we were traveling, things would be better. But even halfway around the world, he was still unhappy. With no job or issues with the condo to complain about, he continued to whine, but now more and more frequently about me. Fred had always had gripes. My hair was turning gray or not perfectly straight. And once I had allowed a bottle of wine to fall out of his car when I opened the door. He called it alcohol abuse. I hadn't realized that his unhappiness was the pattern. I had been afraid that his video contest idea was a bad idea because I would be busier, and he hated that. But I really thought Declan could make it work. I had never imagined he would be so jealous or that he would believe I was disloyal or like Declan more. It didn't make any sense. I was grasping at straws and figured that if I was responsible, maybe I could also figure out how to fix it. "What do you mean?" I asked. Carl's first suggestion was that Fred should not stay with me that night. "Whenever he comes back," he said, "you need to tell him that he has to stay somewhere else." "That doesn't sound very nice," I ventured, my voice full of hesitation. "He's my husband and I love him." "What he did was not nice," Carl countered. "And if you were here in the U.S., he might actually be in jail." "This is not about being nice. This is about what you need to do to take care of yourself and be safe." I reluctantly said goodbye to Carl, shut down my laptop, and thought more about consequences. This was not the first time Fred had been physical with me. Over the course of our relationship, particularly in the years since we had gotten married, Fred was frequently upset about my behavior, my appearance, even my being noisy. He complained about the lunches I packed him and that I ate my apples too loudly and held my sandwich with too many fingers. He hated when I talked on the phone to friends inside our house, so I'd taken to calling everyone I knew on my walk home from work. Earlier on our trip, he had stopped walking with me on beaches because my footsteps in the sand were too loud and would distract him. It upset him that I read too quickly on my Kindle and said that even when I switched pages noiselessly on the electronic device, it disturbed him. On a 24-hour bus trip through India, he complained that I went to the bathroom too often. You could only go to the bathroom when the bus stopped, and sometimes it only stopped every 6 hours. Fred would not go every time we stopped, but I would. More and more, he used physical tactics to express his frustration. Sometimes he pinched me when he got aggravated, which really hurt and left a bruise. The trip was not making things better. In fact, the longer we were away and the farther we traveled, the angrier he got. I was on Skype talking to friends from Los Angeles who had moved to Beijing when Fred returned to our hotel room several hours later. They wanted me to come to China to be with them, but I wasn't ready to make any decisions about what to do. My shoulder and neck were still hurting from my fall, and while I had taken some Tylenol, I was in pain. My head throbbed. I wondered if I hit my head and perhaps had a concussion, but I also thought my headache might be due to confusion and emotional trauma from being harmed by my husband. I said a hasty goodbye to my friends and closed the computer. Fred said, "Who were you on the phone with?" "I was talking to Brent and Wendy," I told him. "I need my friends right now. We are so far away from home, and I feel really hurt and alone." "Why are you telling everyone our business?" Fred demanded. "Because I am devastated. Our marriage is broken. What you did is not okay. I have been sitting here in this hotel room hysterical and upset. I cannot believe that you pushed me. You hurt me. You ripped my necklace. You made me fall in front of other people, and then you left." "I was wandering the streets thinking about you," he said. I looked at him, waiting for him to apologize. But he didn't. He never apologized. He always had an excuse. "I thought you would follow me," he went on. "I kept looking back for you." "I did think about following you, but what you did was wrong. You cannot push me." In truth, he had pushed me before. I had thought about leaving once and staying at my parents', but I was too embarrassed to admit what happened, so I stayed at our condo. But today, he had crossed a line. He could have killed me. If I'd hit my head on the concrete, he might have been calling my parents to tell them I was in a hospital in Thailand with a broken neck or dead. He said, "I was upset that you agreed to do the contest with Declan." As he spoke, something in me shifted. His feelings were hurt that I had taken the side of the tech person whom we paid to help me. Help that I desperately needed because he spent most of the day playing video games on his iPad while I worked tirelessly on the site. "Our marriage is broken," I told him. "You cannot stay here tonight." He was stunned. "Where am I going to stay?" "I don't know, but you can't stay here." He protested, but I stood my ground. I knew he was waiting for me to change my mind. He seemed sad, but if he knew that he had acted badly, he was not taking responsibility. Eventually, he agreed to leave and returned to Chiang Mai, which was 3 hours away by bus. He would get a hotel room, and we would meet there in 2 days after I had time to think. I was crying, and before he left, he held me for a long time. My mind and my heart were at war. For months, we had been inseparable, but now he seemed like a stranger. How had this happened? I wanted so badly to ask him to stay and hold me all night, but I kept hearing Carl talk about consequences. It was comforting to be held in the arms of my husband, and at the same time, my shoulder throbbed because this very person had thrown me to the ground. He asked me if I was okay. I said I wasn't. Then he asked me again if he really had to go. I took a deep breath and pulled away. "It's time for you to leave." As I sat alone in my hotel room that first night, my mind raced through all of the bad or questionable decisions I had made over the course of our relationship. How could I have chosen to marry someone who would do this to me? What had I missed? Maybe, I reflected, I should have left him in Malaysia after he slapped me. Maybe when he stormed out of a salsa class on one of our early dates, frustrated because he was a beginner and I had more experience, I should never have gone out with him again. I was sure that somehow, some way, and even if it had only been by accident, I was responsible for his violent behavior and for putting myself in this situation. As scenes from our marriage played in my head, I realized that from the very beginning, I might not have seen clearly who Fred was. Instead, I saw what I wanted him to be. I thought that he was my soulmate, the man I'd always wanted who would give me adventure and travel and make my dreams come true. But that was only a part of who he was. I'd had trouble seeing my entire life, which led to a clumsiness that tended to end in accidents. As a child, I'd never been able to play sports because I couldn't see the ball coming at me. On the playground, I could never hit the tether ball. Foursquare was difficult, and I was always picked last for any team. I'd almost drowned one year at summer camp during the swim test. I did know how to swim, but I jumped in and began swimming to the other side. And the water was cloudy, so I couldn't spot the opposite edge of the pool. I just kept swimming and swimming, never getting anywhere. I think I was swimming at an angle toward the deeper end. The last thing I remember was sinking down toward the bottom. I couldn't keep going, but I couldn't find the other side. One of the counselors jumped in and fished me out before I hit the bottom. For the rest of the summer, I sat on the steps of the pool while the other kids swam. The sport I was forced to participate in throughout my childhood was skiing. My father had always loved skiing, and we went on ski trips for every holiday break. Everything about skiing was a challenge. The skis and poles were heavy, and I always felt like I was about to drop everything when we were walking to the mountain. Once we got to the top, I struggled to see a path down through the other skiers, making the process of getting down again overwhelming. My childhood eye doctor admitted he couldn't correct my vision to 20/20 and sent me to a specialist who said that yes, while something was preventing me from seeing 20/20, it was nothing to worry about medically. I had learned to compensate for the gaps in my vision by always working harder and trying harder than everyone else. I made straight A's, sat in the front of the classroom, and avoided tennis and tetherball because I just assumed I was lousy at sports. I never complained, so my parents didn't worry. Now I began to wonder, however, if there was some connection between my struggles with physical sight and my ability, or inability, to perceive people and situations accurately as they really were. Maybe I was finally seeing the truth. I barely slept that first night. The next day, I kept calling friends around the world as the time zones permitted. I spoke again to my friends in China who wanted me to get on a plane and come to them. I considered their offer, but since I could barely go 5 minutes without bursting into tears, I couldn't imagine going to the Chinese embassy in Bangkok to get a visa. Frankly, I couldn't imagine doing anything. The following morning, I was exhausted, but managed to get on the bus back to Chiang Mai. Fred typically did all of the paying and negotiating when we traveled, so it was the first time I had paid for anything in months. I did my best to talk to the driver in Thai, but nothing felt Demak Mak. Instead, it felt like the universe had fallen out of place in the cosmos. Nothing made any sense. I chose a seat by the window, which I thought might be more comforting and possibly make me feel less alone. I opened my Kindle, but couldn't focus on the pages or remember what was happening in the story. As the streets of Chiang Rai drifted away behind me, I realized that I was going to have to travel much farther than this first leg back to Chiang Mai to find shelter and support. When I got to Chiang Mai, I called Teresa, my best friend and college roommate. We'd had several calls over the past few days where she urged me to come home as soon as possible. That day, I was only aware of being on the phone with her for an hour or so. In reality, we spent more than 4 hours going round and round in the same conversation. "If I buy you a ticket, will you get on the plane?" Teresa pressed. I'm leaving? I asked. 2 days had passed, and the events unfolding still didn't make any sense. Why did she want me to leave Asia? I loved Asia. I loved traveling. I didn't feel ready to leave. Fred and I had been talking about finding a place to live for the next 4 months. I was happy to stay in Asia indefinitely, but I was tired of being constantly on the move. I wanted more stability. I wanted to settle into a neighborhood or town to really work at learning the language, to make friends. We had talked about picking several places like Chiang Mai or Koh Samui in Thailand, Ubud in Indonesia, or maybe somewhere in Central America, closer to home, so we could visit on the way there or back, and staying in each one for 4 months. If I left now, how would I get here again without Fred? What if I never got back to Thailand? I can come to Thailand and fly home with you, she offered. I'll fly from Philadelphia to Chiang Mai to pick you up. Why would you come to Thailand? Are you going to get on the plane? She continued, because if you are not going to get on the plane, I am coming to get you. Why am I leaving? I was confused. But Teresa was persistent, and by the end of the call, even I understood that I was not in any shape to stay in Thailand alone. I also knew I was not ready to see Fred. Leaving made the most sense for my safety. Teresa offered to help me purchase the ticket, and I relented. But there was a problem. I had Fred's passport. I always carried both our passports, and now I realized I couldn't leave Thailand without handing his off to him. Maybe I would have to see him, I said. After all, I couldn't abandon him in a foreign country without any means of getting home. Teresa suggested I leave his passport in an envelope at the front desk and email him after I was on the plane to tell him it was there. My ticket booked, I hid in my hotel suite for the next 48 hours, eating cheese sandwiches for every meal while I Skyped with friends. People kept telling me that I was brave, that I was courageous. I actually looked up both words in the dictionary because I thought, perhaps I had misunderstood their meaning. I was not brave. I was not courageous. The only thing I seemed capable of doing was crying and eating chocolate out of the mini fridge. At one point, Teresa suggested I sit by the pool and read. So I put on my bathing suit and went down and sat on a lounge chair beside the pool. However, I couldn't concentrate and I felt too exposed outside. I never even took off my robe. Instead, I pulled several towels over me and hid on my chair. I read for a few minutes before deciding I was going back inside to cry. During all this, I still hadn't called my parents. I didn't want them to know what had happened, because if Fred and I were somehow able to overcome this incident and put our marriage back together, they would never forgive him if they knew what had transpired. I recognized that they would, without any doubt, consider these events unforgivable, even if I did not. As it turned out, I found out later that they already knew. Fred had contacted them from Chiang Rai and said I was angry and not speaking to him and that he had behaved badly. At the time, my parents didn't contact me about it. They waited for me to get in touch. Fred didn't mention the physical part of our encounter or hint that he might have harmed me in any way. He made it seem like a small marital spat. My parents had been in intermittent contact with Fred during our trip because they were helping us with our condo, bills and mail, and had power of attorney for both of us. His relationship with them had always been good. Fred and my mom often talked about their work with children in a school setting. My dad and Fred bonded over their love for me and both wanted me to be happy. I had promised Teresa that I would get on the plane, and I like to follow through on my promises. So, on the third day, I shoved all of my things back into the backpack that Fred had bought me for our trip.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?